Hello and welcome to episode number 82 of the podcast More Than Tones, Music Education and Society. This episode consists of conversations with Maria Westphal, Caroline Brosch and Thiago Cosmo that took place at the University of Music Lübeck. Maria Westphal is a Swedish professor of music education, currently working at the Rhythmic Music Conservatory in Copenhagen, Denmark. As a field researcher, she has observed and interviewed people about their music making with others, in many different countries and from many stages of life. In 2021, she has established CREARC, the Center for Research in Artistic Citizenship. So she has been doing research on the concept of artistic citizenship for several years now, in cooperation with researchers from other countries. She observed how artists take on the role of artistic citizens, leading music groups, how they create meaningful interactions with participants and offer opportunities for co-creation. Two of these artistic citizens are Caroline Brosch and Thiago Cosmo, who have started the Camerata Laranjeiras, a participatory youth orchestra in Rio de Janeiro. In the beginning of this episode, they tell their story and share their views about artistic citizenship. Later on, Maria tells the story of Swedish citizens in their 80s who started making music as young men in the military and who became artistic citizens in their communities after having finished their military service. Apart from these examples, we talk about these questions. How do people interact in musical communities? How can artists consciously shape these interactions? What could be the role of artists in society in general? During the first 11 minutes, you'll hear some background noises coming from the cafeteria of the University of Music. The conversation with Maria took place in our office, where it was quite calm. I hope you enjoy listening to Carlos, Thiago's and Maria's stories as much as I did.
Thiago and I, we moved from Norway to Brazil. I'm a trained violinist, and I went to Brazil to be the concertmaster of the Brazilian Symphony Orchestra, but we were a couple, and our dream was to combine our strengths, because Thiago is from a favela, and he knows a really hard reality, and I'm this Western musician. To combine this and start a project and bring this different perspective together. And we started with, I think, 8 students and a weekend, and we noticed immediately that we did something that was beyond making music, because we kind of changed the perspectives of all the participants, because we didn't just invite people or students from the favela, we invited people from all Rio. And so people were meeting from the German school, where I was teaching violin as well, and from the social context where Jack was teaching, and they noticed, well, we have quite a lot in common. And so it became really an intercultural project, and they started to play together, but their whole life perspective changed. The group was growing over the years, and what I saw as a European musician, that very often NGOs were founded in the favelas just to keep the kids occupied. And Thiago studied music, so his mother was cleaning in the night, in the morning, everything to pay the violin lesson for him, so that he's able to study at the music conservatory to get in an audition. And so he had a new perspective in life. It was not just, you know, he kept busy in the afternoon, so he's not joining the criminality gangs, but he actually has a perspective for life. That was lacking a lot in the NGOs. So it was just always, you know, we get a lot of money, it's all about quantity. But so we said, okay, so we really want to educate them as citizens, so like artistic citizenship, that's what we were teaching from the first day, but with quality. So we were always thinking, so how can we play better? But we didn't just train them playing, so we did a lot of workshops, like acting, or doing tango dancing. And so we had this network, like Thiago had this network, and I had this method from all the experts from all over the world. We invited a Norwegian businessman to talk about how to organize your life, and we worked together with a with advocates from a huge company, and so that actually they get a lot of input from different things. And what changed was just that they got better on their playing together because they had a different perspective. I don't know how to explain it. Saw it, but actually what we did was just spend time together and really listen to what do you have to offer and what can we offer. So it was like you said, it's not just we give something to them, so it was always we took a lot from them as well, and we combined it.
And perhaps also you did this kind of more multiplying things also, but the way it worked, because you were performing in quite untraditional places in order to be, you know, accessible and to inspire others.
Norwegian is a pretty city and very beautiful, and I think it really complex also with a lot of problems, but you know, the most beautiful part in Rio, the cultural encounter, is carnival, because people from the favela and from the middle class, tourists also come together, and you know, it's not anymore a wall between people. And what is really beautiful to see also when you're playing, you know, in public place, that people just went to work, and also, you know, business people and businessmen, and also people that live in the street, was together, everybody together, singing together, you know, making music together also was really the point that people forget this. You know, I'm rich, you are poor, and I have you know, fear of you.
Yeah.
And poor people also, you know, why you look so to me so strange.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of situation happened a lot in Rio, and we try to break this situation for music and promote, you know, the encounter of the people. And it was so beautiful to see all the rich people that lived, you know, so close, but they didn't know that they were unable. I saw this situation also, people just start to see each other, to talk, and, oh, I'm living here in this street, and, oh, really, oh, me too, and then, and you know, this kind of situation is so beautiful to see, and also try to break the wall.
You talk about ethnic citizenship because you saw, you identified something like the big segregation and stigmatization also, mm-hmm. that people, that is very evident in Rio, but I think it's also in many European countries. And also to see where do people meet and where do people, so you actually worked with your orchestra, you went to the metro station, you were on the beach, you were in the squares, and also, and you said you had the audience, the people just came because they thought it was a great thing to see kids from different parts of the city just doing this together, and they were like this kind of united group there.
So we pointed out, so we introduced every musician, because it was from all, like from Copacabana, Ipanema, but then also from Maré and from all the poor areas. And so we were telling, so this is Igor from Copacabana, he was very proud, but then Igor, and he was from Maré, very dangerous, and Banu, and that was really nice. So we gave them space, and they were suddenly proud of the place where they were. That was a huge challenge, actually, to notice we are all the same, and it's very hard that you grew up in a difficult reality, and we acknowledge that, but you will not get any like special treatment, because we didn't do like many projects like all these like poor kids from the favela, they're so poor, we didn't do that, and they were used to that. So that was a big challenge, and we had to do a lot of discussions. We always started the rehearsals sitting on the floor in a round, and actually people talking was hard, but then suddenly all this came out and we could look at it.
And I think that's so important when we work with this concept of artistic citizenship, what you're saying, we are not just, we feel sorry for you, we are going to help you, because what you want to do is that people get agency to express themselves, to take responsibility, to multiply what they are doing, to spread that to others too, I guess. And I think that's really important when we work with these kind of participatory aspects that you did. Also, the way how you distribute, you know, like some of the musicians in the orchestra were arranging, some of them were doing other things. They had to contact people for the concerts and things like that. This is really important, not just to fix everything for them, because it's, if we think about this as a kind of democratic experience, then it's also close to the citizenship aspect that we are actors in the context, and we also have to have, you know, that kind of relationship. And also what you're saying, that your goal was also to make, not to perhaps be the leaders for them forever, but also to use your knowledge and your competences to start something that they could continue with. And I think that's also a very important part of this kind of artistic citizenship, that also have the trust to lead.
And sometimes they do some strange things. And you're like, why are they doing? But well, it's just, you know, they learn how to take responsibility.
Yeah.
And then it's still, we live for 5.5 years now here in Lübeck, and it's still existing. And they're playing at the big concert halls in Rio. And so I think they're going their way. It's a bit different than we maybe would have done, but it's fine.
When we talk about artistic citizenship, it's been a lot of focus on artists as citizens doing duties, things like that. And in a way, we could say that this is what you did. But you also thought of the necessity to, so citizens, like people in general, also to have access to be an artist in new ways, in different ways. So it wasn't this kind of unidirectional. It's also how can you collaborate the way you did, and you were also listening a lot to the interests of the people that you started to work with. But you were also the facilitators, because you had the knowledge and skills of how to bring people together, and also the musical background for that. So, I mean, it can be done in institutional context, like the ones we are in, but you also decided to do it like more like, you had a background, you had worked in a more formal context, but then you said, let's see what we can do with bringing the knowledge together. And I think it's important when we talk about artistic citizenship that we think about it in so many directions, how we can work, like, both institutional and more informal, but also to think about this kind of mutuality that is possible to work with.
Maria, I'm so happy that you're here in Lübeck and that we have the time to talk about your work as a researcher. So very welcome in my office.
Thank you very much, Daniela. I'm really happy to be here.
I invited you because I like your research. I like what you write and also what you do and share with other people. And I would like to start our conversation actually with a quote from a book chapter that's titled Art for All's Sake, and you wrote this chapter with Charles Carson, your colleague from the United States. And in that chapter, you wrote that artists may ask why they should feel particularly obligated to take up social and political causes on behalf of others. And I think it's a very good statement to start with or to begin with,
And I'd like to know, why do you think that it makes sense that artists take up social and political causes on behalf of others? Why artists?
I think artists and other people too, because arts, it's the conversation about art, what's the purpose of art and what's the purpose of an artist? And like some would claim that art has its own value, and some would say that art is highly political, highly social. And perhaps also in this quote, it's more the focus on the role of the artist as a kind of function or role in society. To think of the artist as somebody who can, through their art and through their art together with others, express things that are important to the individual and the community. So in that sense, the artist can convey these kind of issues too. We're not claiming that's the only job for the artist. I think it's for all us who participate in society, that we can do it in different ways and through different ways of interacting and share what we know, and perhaps also make art sometimes a bit less exclusive. So more people get access also to express themselves through the arts. And I think that could be the role of the artist. And just by doing that, to work together with people, to work more inclusively, to be curious about others, and also to find ways of expressing and communicating artistically, can be an important contribution to life for many people.
You also write in that chapter that artists, when they work with communities and people who want to make music with these artists, that they create meaningful social interaction together with each other. Can you be a bit more specific about this? What does it mean to create meaningful social interaction in a music group or in a theater group where different art forms maybe are merged?
I think at least two things are important there, and I think also the title of the book where this chapter comes from is called Music is Agency. So it's also the meaningfulness there is also for the individual to feel that they have agency to express themselves, to convey and communicate, as I said, like musically, which is perhaps not taken for granted by everybody, depending on, you know, the setting, the context of which you come from. If you know music as something very communal that you do together with someone, it can become very easy to you that music is meaningful and is meaningful in the communication with others, as also for your own sake in your everyday life. But we also know that music can be quite segregating in a way. It's very competitive sometimes, and who is the professional musician, who is the real artist,
yes,
and so on. Sometimes we don't think about music as a practice, as something that people do together. We think more about a kind of very professional practice that not everybody can participate in. But in the professional role as an artist, we can also think about the different facets that we can use in different contexts also. And if we go back to the meaningful interaction, I think also that the artist can really, from their maybe professional point of view, think about ways of making meaningful musical and artistic interaction for their community in which they work, on which they live, and so on. And that is not necessarily just to teach others how to play or to sing or something, but also be curious about the interest and the needs of those who participate. So we can make it more accessible in a way.
My high ideal, I guess, is that everybody listens to everybody, so that not just one person is trying to control what everybody's doing. If 15 people, for example, are making or producing a groove together.
Yeah.
But that's actually a very high goal that I'm setting, I guess.
I guess it's a process, and I think it's a lot about awareness also for us with more experience and more skill training. Just also to practice a bit when it's time to take a step back, when it's time to be more, you know, try really to have an impact on the situation or something like that. I do believe we shouldn't underestimate also the to be part of something that that sounds very appealing for the people who participate. It can be
yes, the musical quality is very important.
And just to feel, even if you are not yet so experienced, but you feel, I'm really part of this song, I'm doing this, and it sounds really inspiring, it sounds really...
Yeah, and the people making the music have to be satisfied with their result. Yeah, that's this point. Yeah.
But I think just, you know, because also if you can work during a longer time with a group or a community, you can really alter and be aware of, you know, when to do this, when to do something more quickly, like you said, and sometimes also give time for the process. But in a way also share these ideas and this process, because it's a lot about the process, I think, both this kind of leadership that we're talking about, but also the interaction between the people in the group also, so they are aware of, oh, today we might have done this for a long time, but now I also feel that I can do this in another way, and I got time to learn this, and maybe next time we will just record this, and so there are many levels of creating things together.
Yeah, I think it's a very good way to shortly talk about this with a group. I did that with my choir in Berlin, the participatory choir. So in the end, I would ask them, what was a beautiful moment today for you? And some individuals could share this. And this is how we would start to reflect on our music making as a group. And then they could also formulate wishes and say, oh, next week I wish that we discuss less, than that we just have more musical flow. And I agree with you that this awareness is important for every individual in the group to slowly start becoming aware of this, because in the end it will make everybody happier, and it shouldn't just be the reflection of the leader.
No, and I think this is a really good example, because I also think in the role of a professional artist or a music educator or something like that, there's also expectation that you are sometimes also being on a stage, being quite one directional to some extent, even if the interaction between the audience and the performer or the educator, of course, is important. But perhaps we are generally quite used to that situation. And I think also for a performer or for an educator, this is also perhaps the expectations that they feel that should fulfill, that they should have the lead in a way. So if they don't have that, it might feel that they don't feel strong enough in the role. So if we really, you know, try to have this more conversation, how can this be good for this group? What kind of things can we contribute with, and when can I do this, when would you like to do that, as the way you explain it with your group, then we become much more aware of, like when we talk about the role of the artist or the artistic educator, when to you know, do things that is good for the individuals in the group, for their musical development or their, you know, musical agency in general.
I absolutely agree with what you said about the artist or the musical leader thinks about him or herself, because I've been there many years ago, that I thought as a choir leader, I'm in charge and I want the group to perform as best as they can. I took a lot of responsibility, and then I felt some pressure. And I think I changed my mindset there, and I thought at some point, no, I don't want to be the only person responsible. I still have a lot of responsibility as a participatory leader, but I want the people to make music with me on the same level. What's the word? I want us to make music on equal terms, which means sharing responsibility, and this takes off a lot of weight from myself as a leader. That's what I found out during several years, I think. And it makes everybody more happy, because other people in the group are also happy to take on responsibility, because then they can shine with what they know and what they can do.
Mm. But wouldn't you feel that as a leader for this choir or for a group, that to some extent that it's a, you create a kind of safe environment by just
yes.
being the leader? I guess it's much a question of how this environment, like also sometimes you are expected to take more of a leadership role and maybe
yeah.
also to give a response in a certain way in order for the group to feel that they are moving forward or doing something together.
Yeah, giving feedback.
And also because they also have another actor to relate to, which is probably an audience. When you perform.
Yeah.
So that also becomes, so what are their relationship to the audience and how interactive is this? So I think we can just think about how we can go in and out of roles, and also for your choir, sometimes in the rehearsals, maybe it's also, you know, you feel that everybody feels that they can have an input and take responsibilities. But does the situations change when you have an audience?
It does.
Yeah, and in which ways?
Yeah. Well, I at some point decided not to stand in front of the group anymore because I thought I don't want to stand between the choir and the audience. I want the choir to share what they want to share with the audience. So I started to become a singer in the group. And I have seen this. Ah, I told you when I was in Copenhagen, I've seen this in Aarhus. From a choir from Aarhus. And I found that very convincing because, yeah, I mean, last night I was in a classical choir concert here in Lübeck. I enjoyed that concert very much. I don't want to say or tell people you should work this way because I like it. So last night I saw classical conductors standing in front of a choir and showing them how they should sing or shape the music. I also enjoy that. But I decided I want the people on stage to interact with the people who are not on stage and share meaning and beautiful music making with each other, not with me standing between them. That was what I decided at some point. And then I realized how difficult it is to start this process because people are used to a leader, to somebody who shows them do this here, do that there, you know? And I believe that everybody should decide for themselves how they feel safe and good. You talked about safety and feeling secure. And the people, everybody has a choice. Which music group do I want to join? Do I want to sing with a person who shows me how to do it? Or do I want to be in a co-creative participatory group? And then I sing with that leader or make music with that person. That's what I think today.
I'm thinking about the audience also when we talk about these kind of meaningful musical interactions.
Yeah.
Because that is also a very important factor in musical co-creation, I would say. And also referring to Christopher Small, for instance. Thinking
yeah,
about
I thought
whole,
about him too.
The context for music.
Yeah.
So also, when do you feel that you participate in a musical performance?
Yeah.
I'm sure that you can find many occasions when you are in the audience, when you really feel part of the performance too, even if you're not on stage or if
yeah.
you're not having a leading role or something like that. So also trying to create this kind of settings in a way where people really feel that they are part of something, that also gives us some kind of musical agency in a way, to really feel that you can appreciate, that you can relate to and be inspired by, and also express some kind of, or communicate your emotions by just also listening to
yeah I agree. I mean, last night I closed my eyes and I enjoyed the beautiful sounds they were making.
Yeah.
And I wasn't watching them. And that was my decision as a listener who was active, because I make active decisions to close my eyes, for example. You were starting to talk about Christopher Small. What I think about his book, I mean, it's a very important book. And I frequently use it or parts of it and discuss them with my students because it had such a huge impact, this book. But I also think it's a bit ideological, and he was very unidirectional with his thinking, the way he describes this classical symphony orchestra setting and that he didn't feel part of it. I think we've overcome this, and what you were saying just now is that it's the decision of each individual in a musical experience, what role do I want to play? And we can
I think when we go back to the musical agency here,
yeah,
it's also that perhaps we as professional music educators, we know that we can take the decision to actively decide how to interact.
Yes.
Because we are, you know, we also have the privilege to do that, and we feel comfortable in closing our eyes or responding in a certain way. But I think also the idea of artistic citizenship is to make people more at ease with having this kind of relationship with music also, and not think that you have to respond in certain ways. You can mm-hmm. be part of an audience, and you can, you know, enjoy it in different ways, and you can also respond to the music also, like that they feel more the closeness to the performance than perhaps many people do today. They might not have this kind of agency to feel that. So I think that's also a way of, as music educator or artist also, to invite people to really feel that they can, you know, respond or enjoy or something like that in a different way.
What can this invitation look like?
I think it can be in many ways. I think curiosity is always an important factor. I think also from the performers, just to know that the audience is not just there to enjoy or to judge or to praise, maybe also the
or to receive. Yeah,
it's also like every time it's a new setting, the people who interact in different ways. So I think also perhaps some kind of invitation from the stage, if we talk about it very visually, also to actually show that you're curious about the response and how they feel about it. It doesn't necessarily have to be like a spoken conversation about it, but I think there are many ways of making people feel more participatory in the performance than we do today. And that doesn't have to be a typical classical concert situation. That can be a band playing in a club, or it can be that we have so many situations that I think we could think of more ways of having that as a more interactive relationship between people who actually perform and those who are there to maybe listen, but perhaps also respond in many other ways also.
I like that idea that we can have an awareness that we create interactions between people, and that this can be very interesting, because then live music or every night or every performance can be very different, and it's not just I'm playing to this crowd the same repertoire or the same program that I've played last night, but that I can be open to the audience, and that's actually also showing people that everybody contributes. That's also showing them how a good society can look like, or what it can look like.
Yeah, I think also that if we go back to the concept of artistic citizenship,
yeah,
but like when we talk about that, that can include a lot of different processes. But one is also that people feel connection and relations,
yeah,
and feel that they want to contribute and that they are part of something. And I think that's the key for citizenry generally, like the people are part of the community, they can contribute, they can also, you know, do their what they feel obliged to do, and they have to be considerate about other people and things like that. And also when you think about music, these things are also very important. Your first question here also, why should artists feel? Yeah. So I think in that sense also that even if the artist would create works for their own sake, but I think for most artists it's also important to have a kind of relationship to other people with their art, about their art, and so on. And artistry can be a way to create like meaningful relationships generally, which is also affect other areas in life. Not necessarily because, I mean, it's not like, oh, we become better at writing or it's not like that, but we might be, as Thomas Torino for instance talks about when he talks about, you know, collective music making, and also how people are considerate and how they share decisions. He said that can have an impact on so many other ways of life and citizenship in a way also, that in music and in music making and in musical relationship we also practice how to engage with each other in other parts of life. And I think that's important. And music can also have music education, or performance can also have other ways of being conveyed. But I think this is really important. And this is, I think, what many people also want arts and music to be there. So you feel that it concerns you.
Yeah. When you started researching artistic citizenship, you visited different groups. You watched them, how they made music with others, and also you watched the effects of the music making on the different individuals. I think that's how you came to the point where you are now and why you can share this, like how music making can affect communities and people. Do you have maybe a story that is still in your mind, something that you experienced as a researcher with a group?
I would say that it didn't start with me doing research explicitly about artistic citizenship. But artistic citizenship was something that slowly became some kind of key reference for me when I looked at the research I've been doing for quite a while now in different settings. I've been doing research about music making with young children, with, you know, music students, with people who used to be musicians who have been retired for a long time. So in different ages and stages in life. And in all these settings, I realized that the sense of, you know, belonging and becoming have been so important. I would perhaps like to talk about a project that I did like 10 years ago. I was interviewing people who started as military musicians in the Swedish Army a long time ago. And that was their way of getting a kind of musical training on this, before they could get more like state-run music education and so on. So that was a project I did, and those I interviewed were between 80 and 90 years old. They had been musicians their whole life, and for many of them, most of them came from working class backgrounds. So for them to start in the army in the 1940s or something like that was not necessarily because they wanted to play an instrument or they wanted a job, and the army offered like this kind of musical training for them. So for many of them, music was not the key at the beginning. It was the way of, you know, getting an income and, you know, it's other things, working in the shop or running errands or something like that. But it became such a central part of their lives. So after being in the army, most of them became like civilians, but they had their musical training. And so many of them became really prominent musicians in the Swedish jazz groups or even in some of the symphony orchestra. And many of them also started the community music schools in the regions where they were. So they became
beautiful,
important leaders for the communities. And
of course, they didn't have a kind of picture about that when they were 15 or 16. My goal is to become a music leader for the community music school. That was something that slowly grew, of course. Yeah. Because I have written a book about this too, but what was important there was that in the army, of course, there were many things that were very frightening for them and hard discipline and so on, but they all the time talked about how they developed musically and how they developed as people together. They were, you know, listening to the radio together, they wrote down songs, they wrote arrangements, they learned all these skills. And then they started to play in clubs and, you know, jazz groups and things like that. And the sense of community that they always were part of, they always had friends that they can play with and friends who knew other who they could play with and gave them ideas of perhaps we should form a group here and bring some younger people into this. That was something that, you know, were with them their whole lives. So when I interviewed them when they were in their 80s, some in their 90s, they were still having this kind of sense of community. They had their friends, they were playing in concerts, and they had done that for like 65, 70 years. When I asked them what has been the most important thing for you, they said, it's like this kind of social life that we have always people to, and it's been so fun also to, because they also had this very open mind to how to learn music in a way, even if they were, so it is a bit of a paradox, they were trained in the military, but they were also allowed a lot of space where they could really, you know, try out new instruments or write an arrangement. So they were really very allowed space to be creative musically, because they didn't have any boundaries. I can do this, but I can't do that, because they are much better than I am, like that. And I think they kept a bit of this kind of curiosity, and also when they were there leading these music schools, that they gave a lot of opportunity for the young kids to go on tour and go abroad and tour around Sweden in different ways and so on. So I think this sense of community and also doing something for your community was really strong there. And I would say that's really taking part of society, taking part as a citizen through what you know, and also develop that together with other people in your communities and settings, and being aware of why is this important for the, you know, connection between people. It can be also, it can be in performances, it can be in, you know, festivities, all the different functions the music can have in a community. And to do the things that they did, they were trained so early in that, because they had this kind of, you know, they were always playing at all these kind of military events. So they just thought, this is how you do, you are always visible, you always play at all the different kinds. So it can be people dancing here, it can be in a very official ceremony here. But they, in the civil life, they just brought this kind of course, we play this, we do that, we bring the kids here, we do that. So I think that's a kind of way of, they learned skills that they, in a way, just, you know, transferred into other contexts and also expanded in a way. Because you could also see that they really connected to the development, the sounding. They were always curious about new music that came, and also to try a bit of that, because that had been in their early training, so on, that you always have to be open to music.
They learned that in the military orchestra, to be open to new music?
I wouldn't say not in the formal training, but there was a lot of informal possibilities.
Uh-huh.
And it was also quite obvious that actually their leaders or teachers gave them a lot of space to explore this. So there was this kind of informal schooling that was going on in parallel to the formal schooling. And I think that combination made them, you know, much more aware of, and they nearly always did everything like together with others. They also became very good musicians, individual, many of them.
That's such a great story, I think. And it reminded me of my own father, who's 76 years old now. He didn't want to go to the military at that point. Every man was asked to join the military for, I don't know, 2 years maybe at that time. He was making beat music at that time in the 60s, 65, 66, 67. And I think the meanings you were describing, the meanings of music for the young Swedish man in the military, is exactly the same like the meaning music making with other people has for my dad. For him, it's also very important to contribute to his town, to the cultural life, so that people come together, dance, have a good evening. That's very important to him, and he uses music for that. And I think it invites us to stop thinking in these binary oppositions, like if you're in the military, you like this and you want to do it that way, and if you're not in the military and say...
I also asked them what the military itself meant to them, and most of them said nothing. They were not interested in that. They just started to do this because it was their chance to get an income to, you know, to
be very pragmatic.
Yeah, very pragmatic.
Yeah.
And so none of the ones I interviewed, and I interviewed quite a few, were really interested in the more military aspect of it. But they were pragmatic because they also contributed the way they did. And I also think, because many of them came from working class backgrounds, some of them had never played an instrument before, but it also showed that even if you can become an excellent clarinet player or a trumpet player if you get the right possibilities.
The space.
Yeah, the space. Mm. And also the more creative space that I think they got, just to being in this kind of more community-based situations. And they had their peers, and they had the time to do...
Yeah, the leisure time. Yeah. You need that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so it also shows in a way that you can... If you have a good context and the good motivation and are interested in doing something together with others, you can really also develop a lot musically in that sense. The music, of course, they also had the aspects of, you know, they really appreciated things that were very professional, very good. So, I mean, everybody's multifaceted, but that was like some kind of knowledge that they had developed over time. So when they were 15, some of them might not even have been close to brass music or something, but like now they have been quite prominent in that area themselves. So it also shows that you can, you know, you can improve, you can develop, you can learn new things if you have the context and the motivation, I think. And the motivation for them was also this kind of social context.
I'd like to come back to your book, Music as Agency, because I think you found a new word, this artisanship. And to this point, we've talked about artistic citizenship. And when I got this book and looked into it, I thought, okay, artisanship, why do they have a new term now?
I would say it's not instead of.
Ah, okay.
It can be like a kind of, like a development of the concept, or it can be like a concept that you can use in certain ways. I would say that we think of artisanship, also in our chapter we talk about the parallel between citizenry and artistry in a way, and citizenship and being an artist, and that there are quite a few parallels in a way. It's also to participate, to create, to co-create, but it's also a lot about negotiations in a way. We're also referring to the idea of citizenship as being actors in a practice, in a way. So when we talk about artisanship, I would say that it's perhaps less about these obligations that maybe we connect to citizenship, in a way. We also talk about citizenship in our chapter, of course, like obligations, but also that it's ethical to also act in a certain way, both when it comes to citizenship in general, but also as an artist. But when we talk about artisanship, also about more everyday practices. And when we talk about artisanship, it's like something we do. And also artistic citizenship can often be also connected to activism, and but in artisanship, that's also to interact with and through music and make that possible for people in the community, and to negotiate meaning for that also. I think sometimes the activist part, that's part of it, but we also have to think about when music can be something that connects people, and that can be on so many different aspects of life. So it's not the artist sharing and giving.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah. So I think in a society or in a community, to have the connection with music and the arts, that you feel that you are also an artisan, you have access to this, and you share this, and you can negotiate content and meaning with that. That's also kind of agency for people to feel as artisans. Mm-hmm. Not artisan the way of with an S, like the handicraft artisan, but like having this kind of artisanship in the sense that this is something I am part of in the society, and something I contribute to, something I also receive things from, and something I can negotiate with. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense?
I think it does, because what I was thinking while I was listening to you is that an artistic citizen might be an artist who says, okay, I want to be an activist at the same time, and my idea of society, of a community is this, and this is what I want to realize now. And this can be a bit overpowering, maybe, and I think what you describe is something else. We were talking in this podcast talk a lot about being in dialogue with other people and co-creating together, being aware that everybody has different intentions, and that my intention as an artist or leader may not be the same as your intention as the person joining me for the music making process. That's what I get out of it when I listen to you.
When it's also, and this sounds very educational, but, and yes,
that's we are educators,
but we are also citizens. And but I think that the idea of being interesting to learn from each other, but also learn together.
Yes.
I would say that this kind of learning aspect is also connected to the curiosity I was talking about. And the curiosity, yeah, is not to be nosy about things, it's actually to be, yeah, you know, open to what would happen if, like, a more kind of existential idea. And if we could have this kind of openness and, like, a kind of social trust that I can also participate in this way, and I can feel like I am a person who participates in these practices in different capacities. So that's why we also write about these kind of everyday practices, not saying that we also think that the activist dimension is really important, but what we do is perhaps also trying to emphasize that this kind of artisanship idea could be, have more facets in a way, and in that sense also be relevant to people in different life situations, and doesn't have to be different people. Who are, some people are always activists, and some people are always, you know, every day. There can be different stages in your life, different things that happen to you, so you can actually negotiate the meanings in different situations.
Since you used the word activist again, I would like to maybe finish our talk with one sentence that I thought was interesting from your book chapter, and it's this sentence: we are already activists to a certain extent, though we might not recognize this. So you're saying every person is an activist to a certain extent, right? Or can become one.
Yeah, and it also is connected to what we mean, to activists in the sense that we think what we do can have an impact on others and ourselves and the world.
Hopefully. And that's so important for our satisfaction in life that we have this feeling.
Yeah, and meaningfulness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so in that sense, and of course this kind of activist dimension can also vary and be more intensified for different situations and also things that you are really engaged in. But I think in general, like, most of us look for meaningfulness, and meaningfulness is also a way to have purpose and to you know, have a say, and to try also to, yeah, the dialogue dimension, also understand what's happening, and also to express opinions and to express ourselves in general. And I think that's also a very important democratic idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in that sense, this is not just to feel that we need to be passive and wait for, we want to contribute in the communities.
Every individual wants that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Maria.
Thank you, Daniela.
This was episode number 82 of the podcast, More Than Tones, Music Education and Society. A big thank you to Maria Westphal, Caroline Brosch and Thiago Cosmo. We are looking forward to receiving your feedback about the topics we talked about. If you want to share your thoughts, please go to the blog Mehr als Töne, written with OE, Podigy.io, and leave them in the space for comments you'll find under each episode. The next episode will also be in English, and we'll continue talking about artistic citizenship and the transformative potentials of music mediation. Axel Petri Preis from Vienna will be my guest for that. If you're interested in the other English episodes of this podcast, scroll down to March and April 2021 or September and October 2020. So stay tuned, and in the meantime, enjoy making and listening to music and teaching.